So as Mike said today, I'm looking at our seventh core value, which is being honouring, generous and gracious in all of our relationships. So I'm going to be looking at what it means to be honouring, to be generous and to be gracious. I want to start at the end of the sentence first, where it says in all of our relationships. So everything I say today about how we relate to people, how we treat people, it applies to everyone, not just fellow Christians, not just people we like. So what I want you to do, a bit of a challenge, I want you to think about a person or perhaps a group of people you struggle not just to love, but to even like. And don't pretend that there isn't anyone. Okay, none of this I love everyone nonsense. Okay, I'm not buying it. Not asking you to tell anyone who it is. It could be anyone. It could be someone you find difficult to be around. Mike said it could actually be someone close to you, in family, someone you work with. Maybe someone you don't actually know. Could be a public figure you may never meet, but just the sight of them or the mention of the name makes you start to seethe. Maybe a politician. Maybe that handsome Bollywood actor your wife loves, for example. It could be a group of people. It could be like anyone who plays for or supports a particular football club. It could be just anyone who doesn't share your political beliefs, isn't part of your tribe. Whoever it is, I want you to picture someone, that group of people, and keep them in your mind throughout this talk, starting from now as I read from Luke 6, verses 32 to 36. Because what I'm saying today applies to them, right? Even them, and how we treat them. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. And if you lend up to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners, expecting to be repaid in full. But love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High, because he is kind to the ungrateful and wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. So that was Jesus speaking in Luke's version of the Sermon of the Mount, on the Mount, and there is nowhere there where Jesus mentions any exemptions. He didn't add in at the end, obviously don't apply this to the Romans or the Samaritans, I don't mean them. It's everyone, including those people I've asked you to think about. So when I talk about honour, generosity and grace this morning, we have to remember that we're called to apply this to everyone. To apply it only to some, only those where it's easy, there's no credit in that. Anyone can do that, but we're called to a higher standard. And so now we've got that clear, start by looking at honour. To honour someone means to regard them with great respect. In one of his books, The Weight of Glory, C.S. Lewis wrote this. It is a serious thing to live in a society of possible gods and goddesses, to remember that the dullest, most uninteresting person you can talk to may one day be a creature which, if you saw it now, you'll be strongly tempted to worship, or else a horror and a corruption such as you now meet, if at all, only in a nightmare. All day long, we are, in some degree, helping each other to one or the other of these destinations. It is in the light of these overwhelming possibilities, it is with the awe and the circumspection proper to them, that we should conduct all of our dealings with one another, or friendships, or loves, or play, or politics. There are no ordinary people. You've never talked to a mere mortal. Nations, cultures, arts, civilizations, these are mortal, and their life is to ours as the life of a gnat. But it is immortals whom we joke with, work with, marry, snub, and exploit. Immortal horrors or everlasting splendors. See, as Christians, we can hear the first part of that and start thinking about how we're going to be one of those creatures people will be tempted to worship, and how our enemies will become those horrors you only see in nightmares. But as C.S. Lewis goes on to say, that's completely missing the point of it. We are all made to be immortal. We are all made to live forever with God. Thinking back to those people asked to imagine, our desire should not be that they or anyone else would become that horror from a nightmare, but that they will all become an eternal splendor made perfect in Christ. We need to be treating everyone as though they are that creature you will be strongly tempted to worship. Of course, I'm not saying we should actually worship people, but we must honor them, treat them with great respect. I think that comes from remembering that everyone was created with the intention that they will become that everlasting splendor. See, I could say now that honoring people is about how you speak to them, and it is. I could go a step further than that and say it's not just how you speak about people in public or to the face, but it's also how you speak in private too. And that's also true. But really, it goes deeper than that. Because what we say about people will always come from our hearts. As Jesus said in Luke 6:45, a good man brings good things out of the good stored up in his heart, and an evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in his heart. For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. Honoring someone starts with your heart attitude towards them. See, to truly honor and respect someone, it can't just be words or deeds. It has to be internal. And I know that's not easy, but everyone you meet, no matter how much they may annoy or upset you, is made for immortality, created for eternal splendor. And we need to learn to see people as God sees them. And when we start doing that, we can truly honor them. As well as honoring people, this value calls us to be generous, which means to show a readiness to give more of something than is strictly necessary or expected, whether that be money, time, hospitality, or anything else you can give. And this again comes back to your heart attitude, because generosity is always going to come from the overflow of your heart. When you truly honor people in your heart, when you see them as God sees them, generosity will come from that overflow of your heart. We can all be generous with the people we love, or even maybe not just love, but, you know, just like. In thinking about this, I was writing this sermon, I was thinking how this applied to me in my work as a teacher. There are plenty of opportunities for me to choose whether or not to be generous with how much extra time and effort I'm going to put into helping my students. And I know that how willing I am to go the extra mile can vary depending on the student or the class. Because, you know, while I should treat them all equally, I have different views of my students, largely based on how hard they're trying. And that's human nature. And I'm not beating myself up over it, but it falls short of who I want to be. Even the most frustrating students are worth my honor and my generosity and my time. It's not for me to decide which of my students deserve a better and more committed teacher than the others. And same way, it's not enough for the church to just be generous to those we like. We have to be generous to all, even those we might think do not deserve it. Because it's not for us to say who doesn't deserve generosity, especially when we've received such generosity from God. And that generosity, of course, is his grace poured out for us at the cross, which brings us to the next part of this value, being gracious. And I honestly think this is the most important of the three. When you have a word like this, like gracious, that ends with that I-O-U-S, it means to be full of or characterized by whatever the root word is. So here, to be gracious means to be full of grace or to be characterized by grace. I think being gracious is this most important part of this, even above being honoring and generous, because I think you'd find it difficult to come up with a better definition of how a Christian should live than that, to be full of grace, to be characterized by grace. Jesus said we'd know Christians by the fruit they produced. And I believe that the ultimate fruit we should be producing is grace. I think we see this in Matthew 18 when Jesus tells the parable of the unmerciful servant. For the sake of time, I'm not going to read the passage, but just to sum it up quickly, there's a master forgave a debt of 10,000 bags of gold to a servant who couldn't afford to pay. That servant then had someone who owed him 100 silver coins thrown in jail until he could pay the debt. And when the master heard about this, he put the servant in jail. Jesus told this parable in answer to Peter when Peter asked how many times he should forgive someone. And Jesus begins the story by saying, "This is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brother or sister from your heart. it shows just how important forgiveness and showing grace is to Jesus. In Colossians 4:6, Paul writes, "Let your conversation be always full of grace. It's not an optional extra, it's essential. And as with honoring and generosity, what you say and do will come out of your heart. Our hearts need to be filled with grace. Just as the servant should have been full of grace by having this massive debt forgiven, we should be full of grace because of what Jesus did for us at the cross. We had our massive debts forgiven. Unfortunately, there's going to be preachers around the world today in churches, perhaps in person or online, who are preaching against so-called enemies. They'll be naming enemies, theirs, whether it be individuals by name or groups of people with certain beliefs or who live a certain way, and they'll be vilifying them. And that doesn't just happen inside the walls of churches either. Many of the same preachers will do it in public too. In particular, you see it with Christians who try and turn what they see as Christian values or rules into their national laws in their countries. And it always seems to end up with attacking others in a graceless manner. And it's Christians like this that leads to the church being viewed negatively by many people. And we actually need to show people a different side of Christianity, one that is actually Christ-like. In Ephesians 4:15, Paul tells us that we need to be speaking the truth in love. See, love understands that grace has been received from God abundantly, and so must be given abundantly. And there's too many Christians who want to speak about what they see as truth without first loving those they're speaking to or about, without wanting to show them grace. And quite frankly, the church would be better off if they would keep silent until they learn to love above all else. We see this from Jesus with the woman caught in adultery. This is the story in John chapter 8, where the religious leaders brought a woman to Jesus who they said had been caught in the act of adultery. The law said she must be stoned, and they want to know what Jesus had to say about it. Again, for the sake of time, not reading the story, just give you that overview. Now, the religious leaders there, you could be said they were speaking truth. What they were saying was written in the law, but they were not speaking with love. They did not care a jot for that woman. They were just trying to use it to trap Jesus. What happened to her, whether she lived or died, was completely inconsequential to them. But not to Jesus. His heart wanted to show grace because it was filled with love. Jesus' heart was filled with empathy. Even though you could actually say he was the one person there who could have a reason not to feel empathy, given that unlike everyone else there, he'd never actually sinned. He was actually in a position where he could judge the woman. This is the story where Jesus famously answers, "Let he who is without sin cast the first stone." Sentence which saw all the woman's accusers walk away. Jesus could actually have stoned the woman, though, if he wanted to, because he was without sin. Could have said, "Let he who's without sin cast the first stone." Oh, that's me. I'm without sin. Let me find a good stone. But of course, he was never going to do that. Because his whole reason for being on earth in the first place was not to condemn, but to give up his life so that we could have life. So I want you to think again of that person or that group of people you struggle with. And I want you to try and look at them with empathy as Jesus does. Put yourself in their place. Put down that stone you want to throw. Imagine what it's like to be them. Whatever they may do that you think is wrong, they're going to have reasons for acting the way they do. It could have been their genetic makeup. It could be the way they were brought up. It could have been words that have been spoken over them in their life about their worth. It could have been the messages people in authority that they've trusted have taught them. We're not in any position to judge them. You might look at that person you're tempted to judge. You may have ended up exactly the same way if you were born in their position. You may have done worse than them. They may have done better than you if they were born into your circumstances. It may be that actually you're judging them for being wrong, but they're more in the right than you. And I'm sorry if that all sounds harsh, but, you know, I'm speaking to myself too, because we can all do it. And we're clearly told by Jesus we can't judge others. Like I say, I've done it. I've judged people. And I want to finish with a story about that. Because there was someone some time ago who, the way I felt to them, they would have been the person I was imagining today as that person I struggled with. And I didn't want to feel that way. So I tried using Animate. At this point, I put in the standard message that if you don't know what Animate is, please speak to Carl. But basically, Animate is about like picturing situations prayerfully, part of it is. And that's what I was doing. And as I was doing that, I got this picture of this person kind of standing in a field on their own, and they just look completely lost. And although I was seeing them as an adult, the sense I got that they were just like a child who was completely lost and afraid and didn't know where they were or what to do. And it was suddenly in that moment, my feelings to that person completely changed, and I could empathize with them. Because I've known what it feels like to feel lost in life. Like you just don't know what you're doing. And I'm sure I'm not alone in that. In fact, I'd be surprised if there was anyone who didn't know what that felt like. I'd say that's a universal feeling. We've all been there. When I saw that person like that, I just saw their motives, their decisions completely differently. Decisions that I just judged as purely being selfish, I now looked at as just being mistakes made by someone who was confused and scared and struggling to find a way in life, just as I do and everyone else does. And I think society can condition us to think of all battles as good versus evil, but things are never that simple. Those people we've been thinking of during this talk, every person we'll ever meet, they're all made in the image of God, made for immortality, created for eternal splendor, just trying to find their way through life like everyone else. And they deserve our empathy, our honor, our generosity, and our grace. So I'm just going to finish by praying. Lord, I thank you first for we are made for eternal splendor. You have not given us what we deserve. You've given your life for us when we don't deserve it. And so I just thank you for that freedom. And I don't want to abuse that freedom. I want to use that freedom to just take what you've given me, the love, the grace you've given me, and share it with the world. I just pray for each of us today, you just help soften our hearts, fill us anew with your love, your grace, and just that sense that to share with others, Lord, that where there are people we struggle with, that you just give us a picture of them, that help us to see them as you see them, Lord, because no matter what anyone's done, no matter how much they may have hurt us, you love them, Lord. And just, I pray you'd help us to love them too. Amen. Thanks, guys.